Do you vote? If you had the chance, would changes to the voting process increase your chances of voting? Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. And this last election, the midterms, saw more and more of us turn out to vote. But voters have said they would like to see other measures implemented to make it even easier to cast a ballot. What would you like to see happen? You can email us now at tfs@wshu.org or join us on Twitter and Facebook at Full Story WSHU. Now, you may have heard New York Governor Cuomo signed legislation earlier this year which authorizes early in-person voting across the state. Now, each county in New York can designate at least one early voting place for every 50,000 registered voters. Joining us to talk about this is Nassau County Executive Laura Curran. Executive Curran, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
As I mentioned, this new legislation says you can have one early voting place for every 50,000 registered voters. So that would mean your county, Nassau County, can have 19 of them. Is that correct?
That's correct. We can have up to 19 early voting sites around our county. Nassau County has about 945,000 registered voters. We're a big county, 450 square miles, and I think it makes a lot of sense to get as close to the top number as we possibly can.
Has the number been set as of yet? Is it in negotiations?
Well, some of our officials, our Republican majority and Republican election officials, are wanting just the seven, which is the minimum. They think that that's enough, that seven sites are enough. They want to start at seven and then talk about perhaps gradually going up to 19. I think we should work as hard as we can to get up to 19 as soon as we can.
So basically, is it the Democrats and the Republicans are sitting down at a table and they're going back and forth?
This is being done at the Board of Elections, actually, which is half Democrat, half Republican. And they're hashing it out. Hopefully they will get together and come up with something that works for all of our communities and works for all of our voters.
How long do you think it'll be before they arrive at a decision, a compromise?
I hope it doesn't take too long because we have early elections in June for all of the primaries. We want to make sure that these places are up and ready to go as soon as possible. You know, New York, for a long time before the governor and the state legislature signed this new legislation, we had been in New York State among the 10 worst states in voter turnout in the entire country, which was pretty eye-opening, I think, to a lot of people.
What do you think of some of the comments that I've read from some Democrats saying if the number stays at seven, it basically amounts to voter suppression?
Well, I think that's a very interesting argument. I think when you don't give as much access to voting as possible, the bottom line is you don't get the turnout. You don't get as many people getting the chance to have their voices heard through the ballot box. Opening it up to as many as can vote, I think, is good for democracy and it's good for all of our communities.
So if I'm a voter and I'm listening to this, and if this goes through, that basically is saying, okay, if I'm going someplace on the island and I'm going to be there for a number of days for work, it's going to be tough for me to get back and forth to home. If there's a polling spot closer to where I work, I can simply go and vote there.
Absolutely. And then you can do it early. You can get it done, get it out of the way. The old model of rushing home from work on a Tuesday night or trying to get to the polls at 6 o'clock when there's a long line in the morning. It's tough. And it does keep a lot of people away from exercising their civic right.
It is tough, and I guess we at some point we could even have a broader, or if we could spend a moment or two on it now, and even a discussion about why is it on this certain day? Why is it in these modern times that we don't have it on a day where it would make it easier for everyone to go and vote on a weekend or something like that, or a national holiday?
It has to do with our agrarian roots. That back when we were first settling as a country, people would have to travel for a long time. They would have to, get on their horse and buggy and come from the farm. So they couldn't have it on a Monday because that means they'd have to travel on a Sunday and that was the Lord's Day. And the reason that it happened in the fall is because, the harvest is done. Everyone's not working on the soil, tilling the soil anymore, working on their farms. And the reason it, the very interesting reason why it happens it has to be the Tuesday after the first Tuesday. For some reason, it can't come on the 2nd of November because that comes after All Saints Day. So it has to be the following Tuesday.
So a little bit of agrarian, a little bit of religious, and there you have it. And that's why the date is what it is.
And that's why we're stuck with that Tuesday in November.
Are you worried about voter fraud? We've heard so much about it over the last month or two, especially from the Trump administration. Does this concern you?
Well, I think that there are ways now with technology that voter fraud is really not going to be an issue. We can make sure that we are doing this ethically, we are doing this transparently, and that people cannot abuse the process. That is incredibly important. And we have to make sure that all of our voters and all of our residents are reassured that there is not an opportunity for voter fraud. I mean, that's incumbent upon the Board of Elections and upon the government to reassure people that voter fraud will not be an issue and should not be an impediment to getting this done.
You're right about that, because I've already read some comments on some websites from some of the readers saying, look, you know, is this going to be abused? Will people vote early and then they'll try to do it again on election day?
I think that's a legitimate question, and we have to make sure that that does not happen. We have to have absolute trust in the voting process. It's a fundamental right for us as citizens here in America, and we cannot let it be abused. There would be zero tolerance for voter abuse and voter fraud.
Speaking about trust in the system, hacking by foreign governments, still a concern for you?
Well, you know, we are in a brand new technology, and we've seen the influence that this hacking can have, and we have to make sure that we have the software, we have the firewall, and we have the integrity in the system that our right to vote will not be violated.
Is voter turnout trending in the right direction enough for you? I mean, I know the number is up, but how do you get that number up all the way?
We are seeing increased voter turnout, at least here in Nassau County. In our last election, we saw an increased turnout in many of our communities. And that's only good for democracy. If people let their voices be heard, they'll get the representation that they deserve. You know, if you don't vote, if you're disenfranchised, if you feel like you're not part of the process or you don't have trust in the process, then the government will suffer. And I think, as a society, we won't get the representation that we really need. Think about it. Government spends our taxpayer dollars. They spend our money. We want to make sure that we have people in office who represent us and that we can trust.
I don't know about you, but I was encouraged by in this last election with the number of young people turning out to vote.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. I have young kids myself. My eldest is 18, so this was her first election. She was in college and she voted absentee. But there's a real motivation among our younger people to get out there and to vote. You know, it used to be that young people were seen as apathetic. Mm. What did they care? Now, you know, they care. They see the issues that are being talked about on the national stage. They want to get involved, and they see voting as a way to really make their voices be heard. I think it's great.
It's funny how things have turned around in the last few years. You're right. I mean, for years it was, look, the young people, they just don't care. And now it's they're full of passion. What was it? Was it mostly, do you think, when you talk about passion, was it what was happening or is happening on the national stage which brought out this turnout?
Absolutely, what's happening on the national stage. What's happening in our national discourse is getting them involved. I think the school shootings have absolutely motivated them and gotten involved. And, you know, we're seeing more marches and that sort of thing. So, you know, the national attention is turned to there's a bit of activism involved that's getting people motivated and interested. And, you know, all the issues that are being talked about on the national stage, whether it has to do with the economy, with jobs, with economic development, with violence, with gangs, with drugs, with school shootings, et cetera. You know, these are really important issues that impact their everyday lives. And it's funny, you know, I am of a certain age and I kind of grew up in the quote unquote slacker generation. Mm. Didn't see that same kind of activism and same kind of motivation and also demanding of accountability.
We have about a minute left. With that minute, what else do you think should be done on the local level, the state level, to encourage more people to vote?
We have to let people know what the stakes are, what what is at stake, and that they do absolutely have a voice and that their voice should be heard. And for far too long, voting has been difficult. On that one Tuesday here in New York, it's been restrictive. We've seen the lines, we've seen the holdups, and now we have the opportunity to allow thousands more to vote over a prolonged period of time. And I am hopeful that we can get up to 19 and make it easier for everyone to be part of this process, of this beautiful democracy that we have.
And just to clarify again, if these 19 do open as you hope, when would they be open by?
I am not sure, but I'm hoping we can get it organized and done as soon as possible.
If someone would like more information on this, what's the best way for them to go about that?
They should go on the Board of Elections website, Nassau County Board of Elections. You can just Google that. You can find out the information, and that's the best way to go about it. It's being done there. So that's where the decision is being made. But, you know, it's one of the very bipartisan place, so we're hoping that they can hammer out a deal that works for all of our constituents.
If you would like to join in the conversation, we invite you to email us right now, tfs@wshu.org. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at Full Story WSHU, and you can do it the old-fashioned way. You can give us a call, 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. Nassau County Executive Laura Curran. Executive Curran, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This is the Full Story on WSHU. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. This is the Full Story on WSHU. Now, a bit earlier, we were speaking with Nassau County Executive Linda Curran, talking about that new legislation which provides for early voting in New York State. Democrats in Nassau County are looking to have 19 locations where early voting can take place. Now, we wanted to get some other views, so we're being joined by Nick LaLota, who's the Republican Commissioner for the Suffolk County Board of Elections, and Dave Guggerty, who's the Nassau County Board of Elections Democratic Commissioner. Dave, Nick, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here. Good to be here myself. Thank you.
Nick, I'd like to start with you. What's your view on the new legislation?
Well, in Suffolk County, which is to the east of Nassau, we're working through the legislation, through the details right now, and my Democrat counterpart and I on working on establishing a number of polling places throughout Suffolk to make voting easier for our voters in Suffolk County. We're similarly sized to Nassau. We have about 960,000 voters, which happen to be more voters than about 10 states. So it's a large logistical enterprise, but we're working in a bipartisan manner now to get through it.
So how many polling places would you have for early voting?
Well, similar to Nassau, the legislation in Suffolk calls for between 7 and 19. And my counterpart and I are discussing having one in each of Suffolk's 10 towns. And we're working through logistics on ensuring those polling sites are logistically feasible for Suffolk's voters. We're looking at things like, are there enough parking spaces? Is there enough handicapped access? Is there a room big enough to house our big clunky voting machines and our staff? The machines are clunky, not our staff, by the way. We're working through those issues right now.
So you're looking at possibly 10 sites as opposed to the max of 19?
Correct.
Okay. So what would the reason be for not having 19?
Well, that's interesting how you frame the question that way. I don't know that, you know, we can do okay with 10, that if from a messaging perspective, from a communications perspective, if we can tell a Babylon resident that he or she votes in Babylon Town Hall, and similarly for Huntington and Islip, all the way out to Southold and East Hampton and Southampton, that's what we're gearing towards mainly, is having these early polling places be in Town Hall. We can reduce voter confusion. If we can simply tell our voters that if you're in Town A, you vote in Town Hall A, we feel like from a communications perspective, that is straightforward enough to reduce some of the confusion.
Dave, how many polling sites do you anticipate for Nassau County?
Well, we are in bipartisan negotiations, as the county executive pointed out when she was on earlier. And we, on the Democratic side, are absolutely hopeful that we can get up to the maximum number of 19 poll sites. My Republican counterpart, Commissioner Savinetti, and I at this point are not yet in agreement. We are at a bit of an impasse, but there have been communications in the last several days, and we're going to try to get our staffs together. But we really feel that 19 is the right number or somewhere right around there, because we are bigger than 11 states as far as our population, and that would put Suffolk County would be similarly large as far as compared to a state. But we have 370 poll sites on a regular election that people have been used to for generations. To have it come down for the early voting period of the nine out of the 10 days before the election to only 7 sites, we just feel is grossly inadequate, could lead to long lines and not really satisfy the spirit of this law. The legislature had the wisdom to allow a site for every 50,000. We do need bipartisan agreement to go above the 7, but we're certainly hopeful that the Republicans' counterparts will see, you know, for their voters as well. I mean, early voting is in a lot of so-called red states. We've looked at similarly sized counties, the Nassau and Suffolk, and they have 25, 24, and, you know, Collier County in Florida and places in Texas. So we think the 19 is right on the money.
Is there a deadline? Do you have to have an agreement by a certain date?
We need to select our sites by May 1st, is my understanding. And that's why I believe out in Suffolk as well as here in Nassau, where, you know, we're talking as frequently as possible to get those. We're looking at firehouses, community centers, recreation centers, libraries. I think Commissioner LaLota put it very well there. You know, we need accessibility. We need ADA compliance. We need good parking and that type of thing. But, you know, we already have over 20 sites that we are eager to sit down and talk to our Republican counterparts so we can get this in place far ahead of the May 1st deadline, because we also need to all decide how to purchase electronic poll books and ballot on demand machines. And you maybe want to ask me further about that and Commissioner LaLota.
But I would like to, but we only have about 2.5 minutes left. Nick LaLota, I'd like to bring you in. Is the May 1st deadline also for you in Suffolk County?
Yeah, the rules pertain statewide. And I think Commissioner Guglielmi, you know, summarized the issue quite well. But I do, however, wish that the Democrat-controlled state Senate in particular would have handled this with a little better. You know, they assigned a range to counties of Nassau and Suffolk size, and they kind of passed the buck on folks like Commissioner Guglielmi and me to have to hash this out in a partisan debate. They had the votes. They had bill drafters advising them. Why in the heck they would assign a range between 7 and 19 and force folks like Commissioner Guglielmi and his counterpart to have to fight it out, I think lacked the proper prudence.
Dave, first I want to apologize. I believe I mangled the pronunciation of your last name before, and I do apologize about that.
No worries.
What happens if you can't come up with an agreement by May 1st?
Yeah, I'm so confident that we are going to come up with an agreement that I almost don't want to answer that question, but let's hope we don't get there. We have done some legal research, however, that shows that, you know, beyond the spirit of this law, you know, having to locate these centers, these voting centers, early voting centers on lines of transportation and whatnot in a county as big and diverse as Nassau's, you know, I would hate to think that we'd have to get to litigation, but that is an outside possibility. With that said, again, we've had good discussions about getting state-of-the-art technology on board. You know, just one great aspect of this new early voting is we're going to have these electronic poll books. You're going to have a totally different experience when you go to any, and on general election day too, wherever you usually vote, there'll be an electronic poll book for checking in. It's like an iPad or a Microsoft Surface like you see used in the NFL.
Dave, it sounds great, but I'm sorry, I have to cut you off there because we have to move on because we have the Connecticut Secretary of State. But we'll pick this up in the future as soon as a decision is made. Dave Gugarty, Nick LaLota, Commissioners, Suffolk, Nassau County. Now, we've gotten the Long Island view. How about Connecticut? I spoke with Denise Merrill, Connecticut Secretary of State, and I asked her how the vote turnout was in the recent midterm.
It was amazing, I guess is the word. The turnout was something beyond we've ever seen before, honestly. Especially, you know, it started with a massive voter registration. We had more people register to vote than ever before, resulting in there being an all-time high of 2,180,000 registered voters by the time the election rolled around. So it's really been interesting to watch and to also see who actually showed up and where and who they were. Mm. So that's for openers.
Yeah. Many of those who registered for the first time registered as unaffiliated. Is that correct?
Yes, but that's been a trend for about a decade, actually. The party levels remained pretty much similar, slightly more unaffiliates. There are in Connecticut about twice as many Democrats as Republicans and more unaffiliates than either of the two major parties, and then a smattering of other parties. People don't realize we have, I believe, about 60 parties in Connecticut of varying sorts around the state.
I did not realize that. I knew the number was high. I didn't realize it was 60.
Yeah, some of them are very local. Some of them are things like the Independent Party, which has about 50,000 registrants. I believe a lot of those people think they're registered as, quote, independents rather than with a party. But actually, if you register with the independent, then you're in the Independent Party as opposed to an unaffiliated voter, which is probably what you think you are.
Right. I think a lot of people I know are confused about that. You need to say unaffiliated, otherwise you are with a party.
Yes, that's right.
Why do we vote the way we do? The process, that is. Why can't it be easier?
Oh, I've been working on that for 10 years now, and it has gotten better. Connecticut is one of the more restrictive states because in our state constitution, it says we can only vote on Tuesday in November. Many other states, actually 40 states now, vote on days besides Tuesday. I would love to have Connecticut join that group. We would have to change our state constitution. And I have a proposal to do just that. But it's a bit of a long haul. It has to go on the ballot. Everyone in the state has to vote for it. And then we can make progress on other days besides Tuesday. I mean, for obvious reasons, you kind of wonder how that ever even got going, that we vote on Tuesday.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I so many people have told me after the last election that this is what they said. This is nuts. Why can't we vote on the weekend? Or if it's going to be
exactly
during the week, it should be a national holiday. Why are they doing this on Tuesday? I have to be at work.
Yes, exactly. And of course, there are disabled people that can't really get to the polls. We have no way to allow them to vote easily either, because the other provision that's in our state constitution is limitations on absentee ballots. Again, very few states have these limits in their state constitution. So I'd like to remove those limits as well, because most states you can get an absentee ballot anytime you want, rather than having to have what we call an excuse. So you have to have an excuse. That is, you have to say that you will not be in the jurisdiction where you vote any hour of the election day. So a lot of people who commute, for example, you know, are starting more and more to get absentee ballots anyway, because truthfully, we can't really police all this. But under the law, you need to be gone from your town from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. And in order to get an absentee ballot. Hmm. But, you know, so again, we're very restrictive in Connecticut. I wish we could change that.
What do you think the odds are of a state constitutional amendment actually passing?
I think it will pass in the legislature. It has to pass with 75% of the vote would get it on the ballot in 2020. 75% is a big number. It's hard to get anybody to vote, you know, in those big numbers in the legislature. So if it doesn't pass by 75% and passes only with, let's say, 51% or 60%, then it has to go back to a second legislature, and then it would not be on the ballot until 2022. So it is a long haul unless we can get enough legislators to vote for it this year.
Now, I know the numbers were up in this past election, but still a third of the voters did not turn out to cast their ballots, right? But how do you get that number up? And in that same vein, tell us a little bit about the Democracy Cup.
Yes, it's true. Even what we consider a high turnout election for a midterm election, not a presidential, which is what 2018 was, in other words, not a presidential, we had about 66% of the voters registered turned out. And you're right, that's still about a third of people. Well, first of all, about a third, we believe, of eligible voters aren't even registered to vote. Mm. And then if you subtract that number from the amount of the registered voters who actually turned out, you're right. I mean, it's an embarrassingly small number for a well-established democracy. So we work on it all the time, but you know, you always hear it, and I've done surveys about this, I've done focus groups, and people just were pretty cynical up until this election, I think. They started coming out again, but for a long time, you know, they would just say, oh, my vote doesn't really count, I won't get around to it, you know, what's the big deal? So there's a very different attitude toward voting than there was, let's say, in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. When I grew up, you would never say that publicly.
No.
You would, that would be socially unacceptable to say something like that, but no more. So every year, in an attempt to get people at least a little competitive about all this, or towns at least, we award the Democracy Cups in four categories in Connecticut to the town where the turnout, voter turnout, was the highest. So we have a small town, mid-sized town, large town, and city. And actually today I'm going to be up in Washington, Connecticut, who they had the highest voter turnout in the state, 87.6%.
Wow.
Turned out in Washington, Connecticut. And they have actually, it's interesting, they've won this Democracy Cup four or five times over the last decade. We've been awarding these cups for about 12 years now. And so it's interesting. There are certain communities where people just turn out in higher numbers. We're also awarding the cup to Granby, Guilford, and West Hartford in the big city category. So I think it does help. You know, people in the town are very proud of it when they win this cup. And, you know, I do think it helps. I don't know exactly what's creating that large turnout in these particular towns, but they're just more politically active. And of course, sometimes there's just a more interesting race going on. That certainly is a factor.
Obviously, there was great concern this past election because there were fears of hacking by Russia or some other government. What can you tell us about what's being done to stop this? Should we be worried? Is the system better nowadays?
I would say, yes, we were. There were attempts to get into our voter file. I have to say it's a public list, so the attempt in and of itself wasn't that as much what we should be worried about as what I think they're really doing. Some of these foreign countries are trying to discourage us with our democracy. They're trying to interfere with public opinion about our elections more than anything. And this campaign of disinformation is extremely dangerous because people are already pretty cynical about politics and government, and this is just fueling that fire. And I'm afraid it will make people worry even more that their democracy isn't fair, the votes aren't being counted properly, there's some sort of nefarious thing going on. So that, I think, for me, is the biggest danger.
Which is exactly what those other governments want us to think or feel. Final question for you.
Right.
Tell us about voter fraud in Connecticut. We know it's going on or has gone on in other states down south, for instance. They're still figuring it out in some states down there. How about in Connecticut?
Well, when you say the word voter fraud, you know, that tends to cover a lot of territory. If you're talking about people coming in and pretending to be somebody else, never happens. It doesn't even happen in those other states, I suspect. There's been a lot of furor over voter fraud. I think the problems we've seen in Connecticut over the years have been largely around manipulating absentee ballots, perhaps. You know, there have been some cases of that sort of thing, more politically motivated than anything. But really, the idea that you're going to have people coming in person, absentee, regular, you know, fraud, in-person fraud, it's just non-existent, honestly. We've looked at it very closely. But we still put all kinds of protections in place in Connecticut. We have a very good election system, honestly. We audit everything. We have paper ballots. There's lots of ways to check up on everything. So I think we're in pretty good shape, honestly.
Secretary Merrill, talk to us a little bit about voter suppression.
Yes. In other states, we have seen efforts largely around taking people off the voting rolls at the last minute. For example, in Kansas, you saw it in Georgia, where a secretary of state actually was running for governor and removed several hundred thousand people off the voting rolls just before the election. So there have been efforts like that in other states. It depends what you call voter suppression. Again, you know, if your definition is people trying to discourage people from voting one way or another, you know, we've seen little phases of it here, like people telling people that they had to have a photo ID to vote, which is not the law in Connecticut. You have to have an ID, but not necessarily a photo. So we've seen a little bit of that, but really it's very rare again here in Connecticut.
Connecticut Secretary of State Denise Merrill. Secretary Merrill, we thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
And two guests are joining me now in the studio. It's always a pleasure to welcome back Professor Gary Rose, who is the chair of the Political Science, Government, and Global Studies at Sacred Heart University. And you should know that the professor is going to have book number 13. It's a very lucky number. Just about to be published, right?
A lucky number, right.
A lucky number.
Let's hope it flies.
I hope so. And Laura Smits is the Vice President of Voter Service with the Connecticut League of Women Voters. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thanks.
It's great to have you both here. Professor, what do you think about the midterm elections and voting?
Well, I was impressed with the voter turnout. And but in some respects, it really didn't surprise me that much. It was a highly competitive race. And, you know, if you go back to the municipal contest that we had, we could start to see that actually turnout was increasing in Connecticut as well. I think largely due in many ways to the so-called Trump factor, even though Donald Trump was not on the ballot. Nevertheless, in the midterm election, he figuratively was. And on one side, we also figuratively had Governor Malloy at the top of the ticket. And you put those two very unpopular figures, you know, figuratively on the ballot, combined with a very competitive race going on for governor, and the whole Trump, you know, issue that's been emerging here in American politics, that in some respects it didn't surprise me that it drew a lot of people to the polls.
Yeah. Laura Smits, you are a Connecticut native. Were you encouraged in this last election by the voter trends?
Yes, it was really, we had like the highest turnout in a midterm election since 1914. And I think that I agree with Gary that it's definitely due to the Trump factor. I also believe that we also saw a lot of energy on the lower level with younger people getting involved early on, which hasn't happened since the 60s. And I think a lot of that has contributed to the Parkland survivor kids. They've been on the road. It's one of these things where certain generations seem to have to step up earlier than they'd like to. And I think apathy is not no longer a luxury that we can have in this country. So I believe that it's good news all around.
Talk a bit about, because people nowadays are afraid. You've heard all the news reports in the last few months about voter fraud, voter suppression. Is that a problem in our region?
It's not really in our region. I mean, I think the issue would be some of the challenges that might come up are how long the lines are in places. And certain people, I'm an elector and a moderator in Norwalk, and I did have a few people come into our polling place who had to be at work at a certain hour, and they weren't really able to stick around, even though our lines weren't very long, and they just had to go. And once you're in the system, once your name is checked off, you have to vote. You can't come back and do it again. So it was kind of distressing that we had to turn people away, especially because there were important constitutional amendments on the ballot and things that people were really interested in.
Professor, why do we vote the way we do? It seems so cumbersome. And it's like I was saying, after this past election, I had friends come up to me saying, this is ridiculous. ridiculous. This is so old-fashioned. Why can't this be modernized?
Yeah, well, I think you're talking about early voting.
Right.
Yeah.
Early voting or maybe even on the weekend.
Well, you know, even the day Tuesday, there's nothing really sacred about it. That was adopted largely for a practical reason. But to your question about early voting, you know, Connecticut, I will say, has been making it easier for people to vote. I mean, we do now have Election Day registration,
which
is important. Mm-hmm. People don't have to actually register in advance. They can show up on the day of the election and actually not at the normal polling place, but, you know, they do have designated locations for that. You can also register as a voter online now in Connecticut. Also, you can just click away and you're in. So, early voting will probably certainly bring more people to the polls, but I don't want to say that early voting is the panacea that some people think that it is. I think that your previous guest, Denise Merrill, thinks that it really is overdue. Maybe it is, but I'm still inclined to say that people who, for the most part, are not interested in politics and who don't vote. Now, you know, we do have people that get turned away from the polls because of work problems. Those people would probably still vote for sure if we had early voting, but a lot of people still, irrespective of how easy you make it, it's almost becoming like an entitlement, there still will be a good portion of the electorate that will not show up at the polls. Even if you probably hand-deliver them the ballot, they may not even fill it out. So, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical of all the reforms, I have to be honest with you. I'm in favor of, obviously, a vibrant democracy. I'm very much in favor of getting people to the polls. But on the other hand, I also like to see constitutional rights exercised with a sense of responsibility. And I still believe there has to be something sacred about voting. It's not like a drive-through experience. And so all of these reforms, I've never really opposed them, but I can't say that I'm one of the big passionate fans of a lot of these efforts either.
Laura?
I agree. I think if we can offer as many opportunities as possible, it's always a good thing. But I know we have absentee voting, and plenty of people go in and absentee vote who probably are here on Election Day because, like they say, they work in Wall Street. They have to leave the house at 5. They get back at 8. We had an issue one time in Weston where one of the trains was late coming in, and it was supposed to arrive at 7:35. So when you get to a train station at 7:35, to get to your polling place, it can be a struggle. So I think that we need to have more opportunities. Early voting is one way to do it. I am as shocked as you are I've met so many people, young people especially under the age of 30, who just don't bother. They just don't do it.
What are their reasons?
And I asked them, I said, what is it about that? And they said, well, I don't have the time. And I'm like, well, you do have the time. It doesn't take that long. And they're basically also not interested. And also in a presidential, because Connecticut's such a blue state,
right,
and we always go blue.
They think it doesn't matter.
It doesn't bother. And even I've had students, too, come in when they register to vote as a registrar, who are like, well, I'm in college. And I'm like, well, where do you go to college? Pennsylvania. I said, vote in Pennsylvania in a presidential. I'll say, go register. You're in Florida? You know, because at least then they have a feeling that it actually matters.
Right.
So you try to give them that feeling that it does matter. And it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Professor Rose, it's what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Everyone was saying how great it was in the last midterm that so many people turned out to vote. But still, more than one third did not. That's a staggering number.
That's right. A lot of people feel their vote doesn't matter. I think that probably because on television these days, politics has become so polarized and there are so many scandals that are often on TV, mainstream media as well as cable, of course. I think a lot of people are so, particularly younger people, and I see it every day too with students. A lot of them are so, I don't know, they have a jaded view, you know, of what politics involves. They're not hearing an awful lot of positive things about our democracy these days, and you know, even though we lowered the vote to 18 many years ago, you know, voter turnout among 18 to 21 year olds is still below 40%, irrespective of when you look at it. So it has never really drawn younger people into the polls, and I think it's particularly acute now. I will say, largely because of the real hostility and the negativism that you see, both in coming from Congress and the presidency. Mm-hmm. I think both branches of government are at fault here. And so a lot of people just say, this is not for me. And I'm very troubled by it because you do have a generation of really smart kids and stuff. A lot of them, I just don't think politics is...
They just turned off.
...is really in their future, at least for now. Hopefully they will be drawn into it, but I can understand it.
Laura, what would the league like to see happen over the next few years to encourage more voters or voting reform?
Well, we are definitely for early voting, for giving people as many opportunities to vote as possible. We are also all about voter education. And one of the things that we've seen in the past year, because of all of the disruption and all of the polarization, as you mentioned, people are actually coming to us because we have nonpartisan. We do not endorse candidates. Mm-hmm. We take positions on issues. We research those issues very carefully before we take a position. So they are looking for places, and there are a lot more places now. It's not just the league. There's at least 25 to 40 organizations that work on voter registration as well as voter education. So in our mind, it's an education thing. Studies have shown and research has shown people vote against something they don't understand. And rather than admit they don't know something, they're going to vote against it. And I think that's why we've had a constitutional amendment about on Connecticut's ballots in the past and have failed. Whereas this year, we were out there telling people about those two amendments, the transportation lockbox, the property, the state property issue. And it got a lot more traction this year because there was education and information available. And I think when it comes to young people, too, they're getting a little more interested in it. Only because they see their peers. I mean, we just had a guy, Will Haskell, who was just elected as a state senator. He's 24 years old. Mm-hmm. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's 28 years old. So they do actually have, there is some hope. There is hope. So I think the more we can get people involved, the more we educate people about what it means and how important it is. Like, this is an off year, right? It's a 2019 is a local election, where our goal in this election is basically to make people understand that this is the public officials that you have in your town and your city. They're the ones that determine the quality of your roads and your water. This is something that affects everybody. So the more we can educate people about what it means and what happens when you actually vote, because it's really all we have. It's not like we have a lot of opportunities that we can have a voice. So we really believe that your voice is your vote.
I have an 18-year-old. And
is he registered?
He is, as a matter of fact, and he is, and that's what I was about to say. Okay. I listen sometimes to he and his friends. So 17 and 18-year-olds, and to hear politics from their perspective is always interesting. But the good part is they're talking about it.
Right.
And they're actually talking about the issues, and they go home and they read, which is something, again, rare for a 17
nice.
And 18-year-old. And they're watching CNBC, and they're watching MSNBC, and I'm sorry, not CNBC, and CNN and so on, and even Fox, and they're debating issues, and it's fun to listen. And like you said, kind of gives me hope.
Right. We have to hang on to these little victories as often as we can.
Right. But what, Professor, what you said earlier was it's a responsibility. I mean, you have to get educated before you go and vote. Yeah. And it takes time. And it's sad to hear that so many people simply say, you know what, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Or, you know what, if I don't understand it, I'll vote against it.
Yeah, you know, there have to be rights with responsibilities. I mean, that works its way through the entire constitutional bill of rights. I mean, you can own firearms, but there's responsibility that comes with it. You have the right to free speech. Mm. You have the right to freedom of religion. But again, there are responsibilities that come with those rights. And so I do obviously favor, you know, a lot of participation, but I like to increase the sense that people have these rights, but yet at the same time they have to exercise them with a sense of appreciation and a sense that they are being responsible citizens. I mean, again, like Oregon, Colorado, Washington, you know, they just mail their ballots in now. That's it. We have three states where it's just mailing a ballot in. People say they drive up to a mailbox on the side of the road, drop it off often for the postman, and drive on. I mean, is that really how we want to elect our officials? Personally, I like to see people. I guess I'm somewhat old school here, and I'm glad we have gotten away, by the way, with or gotten rid of the voting machines. I like those in a way, but I do think that we did a much better move there by bringing in the Scantrons,
the tabulators.
And the tabulators. Yeah, right. That's the name, and we thank Susan Bicewitz for that, by the way. But at the same time, it just seems to me that it's just going to be one more thing that people do, you know, within our democracy, without a sense of importance, if we make it just so simple and easy for people to exercise that right. And so I think we can have more polling places to cut the lines down. I think we can extend the hours, certainly. Well, I don't see why the polls have to close at 8 o'clock. I'm not so sure I want to see an election on a weekend. I still think Tuesday, I'm still old school on that. There's something, again, special about Tuesday. Nothing sacred, but special, I should say. And, you know, somebody I was talking to a while back said, you know, what are we just going to do, give people a side order of French fries while they vote? You know, is that really what it's come to? I mean, let's make it important. I used to know a gentleman who would dress up when he voted. He was an immigrant. You know, I knew of him, I should say. And because he realized that he was exercising a right that a lot of people in other countries don't have. So why do we water down that right by making it so incredibly easy? I have some issues with that.
Professor Gary Rose, it's a great way to end. Laura Smith, thank you. I appreciate you making the drive in today and taking the time. Professor, it's always a pleasure to see you and can't wait. When does the new book come out?
I'm hoping within a month.
And it's going to actually be translated into Chinese, the first of his 13
books.
No, that's
the other one.
That's the other one.
The other one's in Chinese.
That's it for our show today. Joelle Schrock is our engineer. Associate producers Christian Carter, Sabrina Garon, Natalie Chafari, Carrie Frank is the digital editor, Ann Lopez is the producer, and Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.